Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our Greeley City Council meeting for Tuesday, September 11, 2018. And I'd like to call our meeting to order. Our invocation this evening will be by Neil Harris, pastor of the First United Methodist Church, and the Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Councilman Beck. If you could please. Thank you. Please stand.
Let us pray. Dear God, we pause to remember the events of 17 years ago. We pause to remember those who were first responders and those who were killed in the terrible attack on this country. But we remember the triumph of the American spirit. And we remember that this is an expression, this meeting, this council meeting is an expression of our will that free people can freely and govern themselves in elected manner through open meetings, and that democracy wins out over tyranny every time. So Lord, we pray for this council and for this city and for its people, that as we remember that good triumphs over evil, and that the cause of freedom is never free and never uncostly, but it wins out over tyranny and injustice. And we pray it in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Please join the council in the pledge to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Beck.
Here.
Councilmember Fast.
Here.
Councilmember Pinon.
Here.
Councilmember Salino.
Here.
Mayor Betancourt.
Here. Agenda approval, additions or deletions, are there any?
There are none from staff, Mayor.
Okay. If not, do I hear a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Pinon.
Yes.
Councilmember Fast.
Yes.
Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
Mayor Betancourt.
Yes. Have a presentation tonight, David Fay, Executive Officer for Fresno Local Agency Formation Commission, LAFCO.
I was told I'd have 10 minutes, and so I'm going to start my timer. And I may have to leave at mid-sentence. And if I can get the clicker. All right, thank you very much. Mayor Betancourt, members of the City Council, I'm David Fay, the Executive Officer of your LAFCO. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to speak to you tonight and tell you a little bit about what we do at LAFCO, how it affects the city, and answer any questions you may have. And I'd also like to express my appreciation to your City Manager for arranging time for this session, which I like to call LAFCO 101. As you can see on the overhead and by the copy of the overhead that you've been given, I have a pretty small crew, just three of us, two analysts, an office assistant, and then I have a contract counsel, and that's LAFCO in Fresno County. So today I'm going to speak to you about what LAFCO is, to acquaint you with this organization that you so generously support. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about annexations to the city, because most people associate LAFCO with annexations, but I'm also going to speak to you about the Greeley sphere of influence that the commission has determined, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the role of the municipal service review, which is in progress right now, that your staff is working on, and talk to you about how that relates to the sphere of influence and ultimately how it relates to your day-to-day annexation. And then I'll be done with any questions you have, and I'll wrap it up. I'll start with something that's familiar to you, and that is your general plan land use diagram. This is something that is developed, that you approved as a matter of policy, that reflects community vision. Each of those different colors reflects a different land use and different land use intensity, and you have to measure your streets and the capacity based on the land use. You have to look at the services as city council in terms of what those land uses are going to require for services, sewer, water, police, fire, parks, the whole nine yards. But when I look at the city of Greeley, it's kind of black and white. The LAFCO lens looks at boundaries. And if that's one takeaway tonight, I'd like you to remember that LAFCO is boundaries. That's really what we do. All the activities that LAFCO performs are associated with boundaries. And there's two boundaries that we're talking about today. One is the corporate boundaries of the city, which is shown in a light gray. That's your city limit. I think we have a project we failed to include, but essentially this is the city limit that you're familiar with. And the dotted line around it is the sphere of influence that the LAFCO adopts. And I'll speak a little bit more about the sphere of influence in just a minute. Oh, you'll also note that the Reedley, does this have a pointer? Ah, the green, okay. We've got the Reedley Airport here as well. That is a county, or excuse me, that's a city island that's separate from the city, the main body of the city. And island annexations are permitted generally if they support a municipal use, like an airport or wastewater plant, surface water plant, landfill, something along those lines. So what is LAFCO? LAFCO has been, since 1963, the legislator's agent in Fresno County to create and dissolve, to change the jurisdiction of cities and special districts. There's a LAFCO in every county, including the city and county of San Francisco. And LAFCOs serve as the legislature's watchdog over the boundaries of cities and special districts. Now, that's a term that came out of a court case, and I think it's a little bit misleading because we're all bark and no bite. But essentially, the LAFCO is a local commission to look at the growth of cities and special districts. And so much of what occupies our time on a day-to-day basis are the activities of special districts, not so much cities, but I'll talk a little bit more of why that's the case. So LAFCO is local. It's the first word in our title. It's a local agency, and it's a commission that represents the interests of the counties and the interests of the cities. So we have two representatives from the Board of Supervisors. We have Supervisor Quintero, who's our current chair, and we have Supervisor Pacheco. So two supervisors are selected from the board to serve on LAFCO. And then in the interest of the cities, the City Selection Committee, which is the COG Policy Board minus their county representative, the City Selection Committee then appoints two representatives to serve on the commission representing the interests of cities. And we currently have, there's an east side, west side balance. So we have Councilmember Silva from the City of Mendota and Councilmember Parra from the City of Fowler on representing the interests of the cities. Now, there's also an alternate, that would be Councilmember Robertson from the City of Selma. And on the board side, Buddy Mendez is the alternate there for the representing the county. And the city members, the two city members and the two county members, by a majority vote, then appoint a fifth member, who's in the unfortunate position sometimes of being the tiebreaker, but the fifth member is the public member, and that is currently Mario Santoyo, formerly with Friant Water, Latino Water Coalition, and now he's running the JPA for the Temperance Flat Dam. So those are our five members. Now, roughly half of the LAFCOs in the state have special district representation, but Fresno LAFCO does not. That was allowed in 2000 with a major change of our operational statute. And if you'll notice, because the cities and the county are represented, the legislature in Sacramento said, work on your own problems locally. So when the commission acts, it acts, and there's no appeal of a commission action outside of a prejudicial abuse of discretion. Once the commission acts, the courts have found that the commission has acted. There's no way of appealing it, although there is an opportunity for reconsideration if there's new information. But generally speaking, once the commission acts, the statute has given its decisions a certain durability there. Now, the purpose of LAFCO, generally speaking, is to encourage orderly boundaries, to discourage urban sprawl, to preserve ag and open space, and to promote efficient public services. Again, all at the local level. So we don't have folks coming down from Sacramento telling the agencies in Fresno County how to behave.
Now, when did that start? When they tell us how to do what they tell us to do?
Well, the commission has the independent ability to make its own determinations. Now, of course, there may be influence, there might be political decisions, but essentially what happens at the local level is durable. That's why I brought up the gray area, too. There's a lot of gray area involved. So as I said earlier, LAFCO, I like to say is a thumbnail sketch. LAFCO creates and destroys. LAFCO creates new cities, forms new special districts, and has the power to disincorporate or dissolve them. That doesn't happen that often these days, so in a sense that's kind of a holdover from the post-World War II growth era, but that's what LAFCO is charged with. LAFCO determines the spheres of influence for local agencies, and local agencies are cities and special districts, but not school districts, community college districts, or any joint power agreement or MOU between two agencies. LAFCO changes local agency boundaries and performs municipal service reviews. I'll touch on those very briefly. We authorize service extensions, and one of those is the George Cox neighborhood that the city recently approached LAFCO for extension of service. And the reason that requires LAFCO authorization is because prior to 2000, it was noted that a lot of agencies, cities, and special districts had really very little control on how far they wanted to extend service outside of their corporate boundaries. So when the legislature overhauled the LAFCO statute, it made sure that in order to extend services, there was some authorization, some review of that action. And generally speaking, as I've been delegated authority by the commission, if the city is in favor of the extension, then that assists my analysis, knowing that the city has the ability to provide this service and is interested. It's not necessarily a hostile extension by a third party. And the last one, changing authorized services, is really a more applicable to special districts. Doesn't quite happen that way with cities. Cities are probably already exercising all the activities that they want to perform. Now, one thing that is of interest that I'd like to impart tonight is that LAFCO is a planning agency, and it determines spheres of influence based on the plan of the city. The general plan of the city identifies growth over a period of time, and that's what the commission uses in identifying the sphere of influence, which is essentially a 20 to 25 year growth boundary. So cities are allowed to plan far outside of their corporate limits by planning and zoning law, but their ability to grow has to conform to their sphere of influence. So if you have an annexation, it has to be within the sphere in order to comply with LAFCO law. If for some reason the city's looking to grow outside of its sphere before it can annex land, it has to change that sphere of influence. In a way, it's analogous to the general plan you have today. 5-10 years from now, the market may change, and instead of industrial, you might want more commercial. So the applicant would come to this council and ask for a general plan amendment. So our sphere of influence is analogous to that. LAFCOs are prohibited from directly regulating land use. That is up to the city. So LAFCO may have an indirect effect on land use, but LAFCO has no police powers to control land use or no authority to manage the city's general plan. And so, thank you very much. Must be 10 minutes. Nope, I hit the wrong button. There we go. Somebody in the audience trying to get me to stop early. Okay. LAFCO is also a regulatory agency. Just as LAFCO plans based on the plan of the agency that's presented, LAFCO also regulates the growth, and essentially that's when the city comes to the commission for a discretionary decision on the part of the commission. The commission's ability to approve or deny or to approve with conditions is part of its regulatory function. Now, annexations to the city. One slide, a lot of bullet points. I'll work through them very quickly. You're probably already familiar with development that occurs in the city that needs annexation. You hand your approval over to your staff. They come over to LAFCO. The commission meets, and the annexation is approved. That's how it looks on the surface, and that's how it looks when these bullet points are addressed. And the first is that the annexation is consistent with the Reedley sphere of influence, with LAFCO's. I understand that the city of Reedley has in its general plan its own sphere of influence, which is fine. But when I speak of sphere, I'm talking of the one that the LAFCO adopted. And if the annexation is consistent with the sphere, that means it's within the sphere of influence. It's very simple there. And also that an annexation is consistent with the Reedley general plan, because there's also a need to pre-zone the territory in order for LAFCO to then approve the annexation. It's supported by the city's development approval, meaning that you've already taken a look at the site plan or the track map, you've approved it. That's part of a condition that comes to LAFCO that there's imminent development that's pending. And this is essentially in order to prevent a city from annexing hundreds of acres in a speculative manner. The counties and the cities over time have decided that if there's going to be an annexation that's going to move that city boundary, the county wants to see that there's a project there that annexation is there to serve. There's a city-county MOU process, which contains two elements. The first is there's a tax sharing agreement between the city and the county. That's essential for a complete application on my side. And the second is that there are development standards in the MOU that the county and the city have agreed to. That's not necessarily pertinent to what LAFCO looks at, but your MOU process means that there's a tax sharing agreement that both parties have agreed to, and that's really the green light I look for. There needs to be a way of identifying how the city will be serving this area, both in terms of water and sewer, parks, police, fire, any city services that will be available to this new area. Needs to be demonstrated that the city has the capacity to serve that territory. We'd also like to see outreach to the affected territory before it comes to LAFCO. So frequently there's a disagreement between folks that moved out to the country to get away from the city, and then the city grows up to their edges. We'd like you to burn all that energy off right here in this room before you come down to the Hall of Records. But in the fact that's not the case and they're still upset, at least they've been educated. So you've given them the opportunity to balance the facts and balance the options and to speak their mind. And then when it comes to the commission, if they're still unhappy with it, then the commission looks at it. But our deliberation is a lot more technical. Here at the City Council, you're listening to the voice of the people, you're basing decisions on larger issues. When a project comes to the LAFCO, it's really only those parties that live in the affected territory have the effective ability to protest the proceedings. People that live outside the area that don't like change, they have the ability to present testimony, but their testimony doesn't really equate to an effective protest of the proceeding. And of course, LAFCO staff is available to participate in any kind of outreach that you or your city staff perform in any annexation. We're here to talk to the folks about the LAFCO process and make sure they understand the sequence of events that's occurring that they'll be part of. And the conducting authority proceeding is a technical term to say people show up to my office, I have a gavel, I pull it out, I say this conducting authority proceeding is now in session, I count the protest. If it's effectively protested, then the proceeding is terminated. If it's in that middle range of 25 to 50% protest, then it may have to go to an election of the registered voters in that area. And if it's less than 25%, then I can approve the project. So what we'd like to do is work with your staff to make sure that we don't need to get to the conducting authority proceeding, because that simply adds more time and more uncertainty to the process. So back to the sphere of influence. As I said, that is the plan for the probable physical boundaries and service area of a local agency, as determined by the commission. In other words, when the city comes to the commission for an amendment of its sphere of influence, we want to see the plan the city has for growth and its ability through its service plans that the city can provide services to that area as it annexes over 20, 25 years planning horizon. What the commission found in the hard way was that back in 2006, the city of Fresno came to the LAFCO for its southeast growth area. It was called SEGA, Southeast Growth Area. And they said, 10,000 acres of the best thing you'll ever see. Boy, we just can't wait to pull the trigger. All we need is for you to change the sphere of influence. And the commission changed the sphere of influence and said, but you got a plan for this area. Don't worry, all the plan is... Well, then the market crashed. And 10 years later, the commission said, what's happening out there in SEGA? And they said, it's really none of your business. Why do you want to know? So it was back and forth. It got a little political. And the commission realized that it essentially bought a pig in the poke when it granted the city the ability to plan outside, or excuse me, when it granted the sphere of influence, the city had no plan for that area. And so once bitten, twice shy, the commission is now looking for a plan rather than a promise. And as at this point, we're still kind of working through some of the details. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But I think this commission is very sensitive now to the fact that it essentially gave permission to a city, then the city didn't really follow through with it. And my commissioners are not pleased with that and want to learn from that experience. So that's why we'll be looking for how the city has planned in its general plan and its service plan for any kind of growth outside of its current sphere of influence. And these are the things that the commission will consider. These are the determinations for the sphere of influence. You've got a copy, so I won't need to read it, but essentially it's looking at the present and planned land uses and the ability. Has the city or any agency, for that matter, any local agency, considered the long-term growth of this area that it wishes to include in its sphere? You know, I said I'd start my timer. I think I did, but it's on screensaver. It says 7:20, so I've been looking down and go, oh, I got plenty of time. But I don't think I do. I'm getting close. All right. So this is how I liven things up. When I talk about work, most people will fall asleep by now. But I'm the troll there at the bridge. Rob is dressed in his mail. I guess black and white are really planning colors. And I ask several questions of your knight. And they aren't, what are your quests? I think the statute tells me what those questions are supposed to be. And let's move in that direction. Hope you appreciate the irony of this. And rather than give you the bureaucratic determinations, what I've done is I've translated them into English from bureaucraties.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What is the agency's understanding of its growth? Now, for cities, this is kind of a fait accompli, because cities are required to have general plans, are required to have service plans, are required to submit reports, have a budget, et cetera, et cetera. So for cities, this is a pretty easy question, because all your staff has to do is say, here's our general plan. That's our understanding of growth. You've got growth projections, you've got a build-out rate, et cetera. But for most of the special districts that we've performed municipal service reviews on in the past 5 years, they say, well, I show up on Monday, I unlock the place, I make a pot of coffee, you know, I turn the crank, I spin a valve, I drive out, I spray something. So the special districts are really not thinking about growth because they don't see themselves growing. Their boundaries are set. So I ask them then, what is your understanding of change over time? The resource that you manage is going to change, at least the regulatory environment is. If it's water, it was a drought, then it's the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. So the resource that could be managed is changing. If you're a cemetery district, you've got a rate of absorption of the facilities that you've got. That's what we've noticed with our cemetery district MSRs. A lot of them said, well, we got about 10 acres. Well, how many people are you interring a year? Oh, about 150, 150, 10 acres. You're gonna need to think about a new cemetery at some point in the future. So again, we spend a lot of time helping special districts understand how change may occur and giving them the ability, or at least encouraging them, to think about that change in terms of a long-range plan. So for cities, it's not that big of a deal, but for special districts, it has been. The state is now asking us to consider special demographics when we look at spheres of influence. And in this case, it would be our disadvantaged unincorporated communities. There are DACs and DUCs. A DAC is a disadvantaged community, which is essentially a census block group or census tract where the median household income is 80% or less than the state median household income. And those communities get special dispensation when annexation applications are submitted. Mm-hmm. We have disadvantaged unincorporated communities, which means once they're incorporated, they're not our problem, they're yours. But for disadvantaged unincorporated communities, if you're probably familiar with the Ulta and Amazon annexations in the south end of Fresno, one of those was contiguous to a disadvantaged unincorporated community. And the property owner came into my office about 5 years ago and he says, I got this big deal lined up. I need to annex. I said, hey, you're right next to a duck. And he went screaming out of the room. So he came back a year later. He says, don't let me leave. This project is, you know, on the front burner and we need to annex it. I said, great. What about this duck? And he took off. So the third time is kind of like Ulysses, tie me to the mast. And we finally got through it because there were some things that had to occur in statute in order for his project to be approved because he was contiguous to a duck. So when we look at municipal service reviews, we're also identifying, using the latest census data, we're identifying the demographics there, the disadvantaged unincorporated communities, they may be near your city or in your path of growth, to make sure that you and your staff understand they're there. It's not a deal killer for growth, but there is an implication there that needs to be taken into account when you're planning for annexations. There's other things that we look at. Service efficiency, agency accountability is a big deal with some special districts because they don't have a budget. They kind of, it's a hand-to-mouth. They go, oh, we have a bank account. Well, that's not a budget. And in some cases, we found when we asked for agendas and minutes of meetings, they either don't have them because no one's ever asked for them before, or when we get them, in the case of a water district in the middle of the county, the agenda said the meeting starts at noon, but we get the minutes, the meeting started at 11:30 and was over at 11:45. And we go, you can't do that. So again, part of what we're doing is sort of gently correcting them. We don't have guns and badges, so we can't take anybody to jail. But we do have agencies whose business it is to enforce the law, read our municipal service reviews. And it's interesting to know that there's this, you know, they're circling overhead trying to see if there's anything out there that they that should be of interest to them. If I did have a badge and a gun, I'd have to have a warrant or probable cause to go knock on their door. But as a public agency whose job it is to seek out public record, I can walk in without essentially unannounced and ask to see the public record and put that in the municipal service review. And finally, other matters of interest to the commission, which is kind of a moving target sometimes. Okay, we're getting near the end. And I've got 7 minutes and 26 minutes here. So when does LAFCO get involved with the city? I've been at LAFCO as executive officer now for a little over 5 years. When I arrived there, I inherited an operation that essentially had kind of a revolving door of EOs for about 13 years. And I had a very strong staff. They were very good at what they did, but they were used to a weak EO. And they said, "Don't worry, we'll get you that information. Don't worry, we'll do this for you. Don't worry, we'll do that." I said, "I'm worried because I'm not doing it. It shouldn't be the staff's job to run the agency. It should be my job." So what I've been doing over the past few years is hiring staff for the purposes of annexation processing. So they know what they're doing, and they're building an institutional knowledge there that eventually will, I say eventually, when you can submit an annexation application, will be of value. That institutional knowledge is being built for you. It's being built for the cities. And it's not just looking at the book going, okay, we got an application, what does this mean? No, it's an application that's part of a larger process that involves the growth of the city. We want to know these things, and we want to become as familiar with your growth and your service plans as you and your staff are. For the brief moment that we're working together, we want to be an asset to the city. We don't want to just be processing your document. We want to be assisting in some way to help the city grow and prosper. And on the municipal service review side as well, when the council considers adjusting your sphere of influence because of your own plans for growth, whatever you adopted today, 10 years from now, things have changed. You have to be able to adjust. I like to think of the sphere of influence as the cuff we put on our kids' pants because we know they're going to grow. We buy the pants long, we pull the cuffs up, and then as they grow, they use that cuff. There comes a point where you need to reconsider your growth plans because of changes that have occurred naturally in the working environment of the city. And we want to be a part of that to the extent that we can be of value and of service to the city. So these are things that I've been trying to build into the rapport I have with the cities. I've come out to visit with your city manager and your staff for many years now. I try to get out to see all the cities. There's a lot of cities that go, "We don't change, we don't grow, we don't need you." So, okay, here's my card, call me when you do. So LAFCO, in my mind, is an agency that should be serving the local agencies that are represented on the commission. You have a voice on the commission. You've got two members that represent the cities. If there's ever a time that you need to reach out to them, I encourage you to do that. Because something else I've been noticing is that it's the cities don't always see their representatives on the commission as their representatives. It's like, "Oh, I know that guy. You know, I went to the league meeting with him. Oh, I know Robert. I know him. He's been around for a long time." Yes, and he and Councilmember Parra are there to serve the interests of cities. And we don't have special district representation, in my opinion, with over 90 special districts in the county, in only 15 cities. I don't know why we don't, but that's sort of the lay of the land. So that's what I want to lead you with. LAFCO's boundaries, LAFCO is your agency, your local agency, to provide you the assistance you need to fulfill and implement your general plan. Thank you.
Thank you. That was real informative. Yes. Is there any questions in the council?
Well, it's amazing what you folks do with just such a small staff. You know, there's an awful lot that goes through you folks for cities to be able to grow the right way.
So. Well, thank you. I think that's a tribute to the fine people that work for me.
Exactly.
I had a question, and I think maybe I didn't hear it correctly, but you can correct me. You said that the sphere of influence that we as a city have is different than the sphere of influence that LAFCO has? Why would that be?
If they're coterminous, it's somewhat coincidental, but many cities call it an urban planning boundary or an urban growth area. The city of Reedley has chosen to look at its growth boundaries and with the using a term that is also used by the commission. So you may have a sphere of influence. It may change, and help me understand what your perspective is on the city sphere in your general plan. If it's coterminous, you can change it. Maybe that's a policy that needs analysis. Maybe it's an informal policy that you can work with in terms of how you manage growth or the direction of growth based on your limitations of service. Typically, it's water or sewer that's a major capital project. It can't grow in this direction until bonds are sold or improvements are made to the plant. But the commission's sphere of influence is the boundary that the commission uses and is guided by in order to evaluate the growth of the city and annexation proposals that are submitted.
Rob, do you have the two different maps?
They are actually on the same map. I'll give you the explanation of how you would
Actually, can you pull up...
Yeah, can you pull up the...
You could pull up his, like, third slide. I think it would help.
The one that had the map on it.
Yeah.
So in essence, what that comes down to is, of course, you have your city limit line. Mm-hmm. Then right outside of that city limit line, you will have the LAFCO-approved sphere of influence, which identifies the areas that you anticipate to grow into in the near future. Beyond that, we have something that we will call our approved sphere of influence or our city-approved sphere of influence. Okay. That identifies the areas that we anticipate growing into that may be within, that include within the LAFCO-approved sphere of influence, mm-hmm. but also go just outside of that. So really what we're doing is we're taking a short-term, medium-term, and a long-term look at our growth to make sure that we're planning for that appropriately, as opposed to just simply saying we have a city limit, the LAFCO-approved sphere of influence, and beyond that, whatever may come, we try to be much more proactive with that and be more prepared. And that helps us not only on the planning side, but most importantly, that really helps us on making sure that we're lining up for our services in the future so that the city services that we're well prepared when they do things like the master plans and they start laying out these items, we know where we expect to grow in the immediate future, in the medium term future, and even in the longer term.
All right. So I was asking Sylvia if we could try to show you a good example here with a clicker. What you're seeing here is where the city's sort of urban planning idea is, mm-hmm. or what we call our sphere of
yellow,
influence.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the yellow.
Yes.
Yeah. But LAFCO's sphere of influence, if you look at the gray and white slide he gave you, you'll see that it cuts across right here.
Hmm.
And so right now we're looking at the 40 acres that's south in Frankwood up here, and it requires us to then go to LAFCO to ask them for a sphere of influence change in our annexation because their sphere cuts right across just at mm-hmm. that line. So mm-hmm. that's probably the best example of a property. And LAFCO is wonderful to work with there. It's just a bureaucratic hurdle that's sort of set by state law and local law, but certainly it's not something that we try to avoid. I mean, they're easy to work with.
Having a little longer look, make sure that we're even more prepared before we even approach LAFCO to talk about a sphere of influence expansion like that, because not only had we identified it in our general plan, but we're ready when a developer comes in and is interested in talking about those areas. We've already identified that we know that we're interested and have planned for growth in those areas.
That's okay. Frankwood and South?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think an interesting thing to note is our LAFCO, I think, very wisely does not want to see urban sprawl. And so where they really, they'll sit down with us and they'll say, okay, you're going to expand in that northward direction. So what we try to do is tell them, hey, we're going to expand in that northward direction, but now we no longer have plans to really expand on the west side of the river, given everything that's happened with CID. So over time, our sphere will change and sort of move northwest, and so those colors will change over time, I think. And so what we've found in LAFCO over the years is they're looking for us to show them that there is a need for us to expand, that we're not just going with the next developer and what the next developer wants to do, but that we're really having a plan for growth.
Thanks, Rob. And I just want to say thank you to you, Mr. Fay.
Fi.
Okay.
It's going to cost you.
I appreciate you taking the time to come and give us a little training. It was very informative to me.
Thank you very much. And I'm always able to come back for any other meeting, any other questions. Your staff knows where to find me. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to working with the city.
Thank you.
Since you made the joke about it's going to cost you, one of the things you didn't talk about is how you get funded. So,
I gotta go.
Yeah.
So you have 2 minutes left on your time.
Do know that we LAFCO used to be a county department, by the way, and then it changed over time, and I think it's so much more efficient now. But we do pay into LAFCO as part of its budget. All the cities pay into LAFCO as part of its budget. So. Hmm.
Right. The county, once the commission adopts our budget in May, then I send an invoice to the county auditor. Half of that invoice is paid by the county, and the other half is paid by the cities in proportion to their annual budgets. I believe your contribution was $5,500 or so. City of Fresno just paid us $133,000. And so, you know, small is good.
Yeah.
And we appreciate your... I want to say contribution because by law, if I'm not paid, I have the ability to go to the county treasurer and get the money. So it's not as if the funds aren't there. But again, as I said, what I'm trying to do is invest more of my time in reaching out to the cities that support LAFCO to make sure that not necessarily you get a direct bang for your buck, but that you understand we're here to serve and support your growth,
right,
and not just an anonymous agency that... does strange things once a month. You know, we're a process, just as you appreciate with your day-to-day work here as council. The commission has a job to do across the county, working with cities and special districts.
Thank you.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll move on to public comment. Provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is the policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. Are there any comments from the public?
Who's ready to eat, drink, and be merry? September 27th, 2 weeks and 2 days from this very night, Taste of the Town hits Reedley. We have rebranded the look. I've tasted the town. If I may, give each of you an Enjoy magazine, or if you'd like to distribute those. We have a quarter page ad with our new rebranding. That's this and a quarter page ad. The former posters used for years had a generic glass of wine and a piece of meat from some clip art. We wanted to show Reedley. These are Reedley's. This is our downtown. This is our real event. This is what it looks like. People enjoying the evening together. Tasting great food and desserts and beverages from our community. So we're excited about that. We have wonderful vendors this year. We're still waiting on a couple last few to respond, but we're very, very excited about who we're going to have this year. We'll have entertainment. Ticket sales are going well. We've sold many tables from different organizations, and I just heard tonight the city has two tables. Mm-hmm. Is that a surprise? Or
No. It's not a surprise. Every year.
Oh gosh! Did I give away a surprise? You're getting to go. So anyway, I just wanted to give you an update on that, and I want to tell you, I grew up in Dinuba and still live in Dinuba, but I'm telling you about Reedley today. Something again impressed me. Thanks to Denise, organized a meeting with six important people from this city that were all sitting at a table and gave up a half hour of their time today, Jerry being one of them, to sit down for a taste of the town and make sure everything was going to be taken care of, from trash cans to barricades and all that. And I was so impressed that the city cares enough about different people in the community to meet there and get things done in one quick meeting. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed and really appreciated that. Thank you, Jerry, and everybody else who was there. Any questions about Taste of the Town? Well, we hope to see you there, ready to scarf it down and enjoy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, the tickets are available through PayPal, but if you want to buy them or let people know in person at any of our stores, or the Chamber of Commerce is helping us greatly with this event as well, you can come in person and get them. PayPal charges us $6.36 for every ticket you buy through PayPal. Which is good to have, but if you can get them local from one of the businesses or the chamber, then they don't get any of that, and we get it. So, anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any more comments from the public? If not, we'll move on to consent agenda items. Consent agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Are there any items that the council wishes to remove? If not, may I have a motion for the...
So move.
Second.
Council Member Salino?
Yes.
Council Member Fast?
Yes.
Council Member Beck?
Yes.
Council Member Pignon?
Yes.
Mayor Bettencourt?
Yes. Public hearing. Ordinances. With respect to the approval of ordinances, the reading of the title thereto shall be deemed a motion to waive a reading of the complete ordinance unless there is a request by a council member that the ordinance be read in full. Further reading of the ordinance shall be deemed waived by unanimous consent of the council. Number eight. City clerk, today. Number
seven.
Okay, introduction and first reading of ordinance number 2018-005, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Reedley adding chapter 13 of Title 5 and amending sections 10-6A-3, 10-6B-2, 10-6C-2, 10-15-11, 10-25-3. And 10-25-4 of the Reedley Municipal Code pertaining to marijuana. See?
Thank you, Mayor. I'll go ahead and take this for the city clerk. Interestingly enough, when we were up until this morning, bringing this item to you simply was a matter of needing to change the location where our marijuana code shows up from the, now I'm forgetting, chapter 13. We were simply going to codify it in a new location. As the staff report mentions, when we were doing the Measure G decennial review, we recognized that previously, back in 2009, this document was never sent to the codifier to be included in the chaptering of our code. It is legal, it is in effect, nothing has changed, and I'm speaking of the Measure G, by the way, that was the one that wasn't codified. So that ordinance very specifically states the location where it's to be located in our code. The medical marijuana and subsequently marijuana ordinances came behind it and took the place where the Measure G should be. So we need to change the section titling for the marijuana ordinance. However, this morning, as we were having a staff meeting on marijuana and some code enforcement that we're doing on that, we recognized that the ordinance isn't entirely clear that external grows are not allowed. It is in there, but it isn't in one simple sentence that says external grows are not allowed. So in addition to re-sectioning where the marijuana ordinance goes, we also want to add one simple statement to make it abundantly clear to our public that reads the code and to our code enforcement officers who may have to show the code to our community that external grows of marijuana are not allowed. That's in compliance with state law. Internal grows, as you know, are regulated now by the state and are allowed. There is regulation and requirement, and that is people do have to come to City Hall and get a permit. They are not allowed more than 6 plants. There's a very specified ventilation and amount of space that they can allocate to that. However, under no circumstance is external growing allowed. So next time we meet you, assuming this passes tonight, you will see one additional sentence in the ordinance, and it simply will be referring to external grow areas.
Are there any questions from the council? Or discussion? None? Okay, I'm going to open up to the public hearing. Are there any questions or comments from the public? If not, I'll close the public hearing. And what are the wishes of the council?
I move to approve.
Second.
Council Member Fass?
Yes.
Council Member Beck?
Yes.
Council Member Pignon?
Yes.
Council Member Salino?
No, I've never liked this, but there's nothing I can do about it, but just go ahead and approve it.
Mayor Bettencourt.
Yes. Administrative business. Authorize city manager to enter into agreement for partial reimbursement of developmental impact fees for off-site improvement adjacent to El Valle Apartments, CUP 2017-5. Rod, Terry, Mr. Terry.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. Rob Terry, Community Development Director. What we're looking at tonight is a partial reimbursement for development impact fees for off-site improvements that are adjacent to recently approved LVIA apartments. That was actually approved as part of Conditional Use Permit 2017-5. So the request specifically before us, you should have the handouts in front of you, so my apologies if this looks a little small on the screen. The request is to complete the sidewalk, curb, gutter, and storm drain facilities along the Dinuba Avenue street frontage adjacent to the approved LVIA apartment complex at the corner of Dinuba and Hemlock Avenues, which I had stated was part of CUP 2017-5, which was approved on August 17th of 2017. They're looking for the partial reimbursement agreements, which are permitted by the State Subdivision Map Act and have also been allowed by Reed Lee City Council Resolution 2015-022. Just a little bit of background. Development impact fees, of course, are collected by the city, and they're done to offset the cost of providing public services as new development comes into the community. When you have projects such as this that are categorized as infill, this gives an opportunity for some of these public improvements that were not required when developments may have happened in the long time past to now be placed. So it's a unique item to infill development, but provides a very good opportunity where contractors are willing to look for these type of credits to continue with a little bit more construction activity that goes outside the bounds of what their approved project might be. But the city works with them to try to utilize these development impact fees to spend them on improving the community, which is exactly what they're collected for. So this is just a very quick overhead that we have here. On the top, it shows the APN map that has the reimbursement eligible area. You can see that right there in the small highlighted area. Just to the east of that is the actual site itself where the 20-unit LVIA apartment project is has been approved for. And again, that's at the corner of Dinuba Avenue and Hemlock Avenue. This is an overhead shot of that, just so that you guys can get a better feel. It's talking about from this corner right here, meeting over to where the existing curb, gutter, and sidewalk come in right there. So it's going across these two properties right here and allows that portion of Dinuba Avenue to be completed out. There is a small break of sidewalk just to the west of that as well, one more parcel down from where we're looking right there. However, that would complete all of the curb and gutter, which, as you know, significantly helps with drainage within the community, of stormwater. I won't go through each one of these items, but this is the engineer's estimate that was given to show what the estimated fees for these activities are. And you can see right there the total at the bottom, $103,600.20. It does not exceed the total amount of development impact fees that will be collected for this project, which is very important. And all of these construction estimates have been reviewed by the city engineer for their accuracy and appropriateness. And they do all take into account prevailing wage as well, which is a very important item that we need to notate. So with that, staff's recommendation is to approve and authorize the city manager to make any non-substantive changes to the attached draft reimbursement agreement that you had in the staff report, and then to sign the final agreement with Yanez Construction, who is the approved developer for this project, regarding partial reimbursement of development impact fees for the off-site improvements that are adjacent to their approved LVIA apartment as part of Conditional Use Permit 2017-5. That concludes staff's presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
So I have a question. The amount of this $103,000, that will not then be reimbursed by the people who live there? Is that correct?
So a development impact fee is paid by the developer when a project is improved, and they will be broken down. The development impact fees are applicable to transportation facilities, law enforcement facilities, fire, general government, storm drain, wastewater, water, and park and recreation fees, and they're all per unit. So they'll pay. So with the 20 units that they had approved here, they paid 20 of each one of those individual fees, 20 times. So the total amount that they would pay in development impact fees for this project, for the already approved project, is just over $219,000. What they're asking for is reimbursement of up to $103,600 and change for the offsite improvements that, while they're not associated directly to their project, they do provide the additional benefit, of course, to the adjacent properties and help to complete some of the city's system.
Okay, so the people whose yards they're going to put sidewalks on, those people are not going to have to reimburse
the
city?
Okay. No.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Actually, what we're doing is they're actually going to do work that we were not going to have to do now. Is that correct?
That's that. In essence, that's really what ends up happening. These are improvements that can happen within your community, and this is what development impact fees are intended to provide, these type of activities. But many times, these smaller type of construction activities of this nature, without some type of development impetus right next to it or helping to push those items along, many times they just don't get addressed in a very timely fashion. But when you have a contractor that is willing and capable to utilize the efforts while they're there to go a little bit beyond the bounds of their project, you're able to get better overall development, of course, for your community.
I think that's a good process there.
Yeah.
It's going to clean up that. It's going to look nice.
Yeah, and the people will be able to walk along Dinuba Avenue there without having to get out into the street.
It's significant safety improvement, which is the initial item I think that staff really looked at and was very, very happy to see. We know that there's many corridors, of course, that we have throughout the city that are very well trafficked, children, pedestrian, bicycle. And Dinuba Avenue in particular, that you could even see in the overhead if we zoom in there. I mean, you can see how worn out the area is right there. People are walking it already. So providing an item that is more safe for them to walk on, not only separation between the traffic, but it's also more stable beneath their feet. I mean, all of these things are a good thing.
Comments from the public? More comments from the council? So do I have a motion?
Motion approved. Second.
I have a first.
Mr. Salino.
Councilmember Salino. Second.
Mr. Pignon.
Pignon.
Second.
Thank you. Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
Councilmember Pignon.
Yes.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Fast.
Yes.
Mayor Bettencourt.
Yes.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can this process be used on the Button Willow, where the same thing is on North Avenue and
Yes, and it's Amira? Already actually drafted into the agreement. The issue is that it has now changed hands and been sold and all of that. So they will have to do the Button Willow portion, and then we will be doing Myrtle with our CDBG funding.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Because that's a safety issue, too, and there's a trail there where they've been walking through. Okay, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for the hypothetical what ifs, if something happened to the financing and El Valle didn't get built, we would end up with the same thing we have on Button Willow, essentially. So we're trying to avoid that.
Okay, our workshop is to review of the systematic safety analysis report performed at multiple intersection and segments in the city of Reedley, prepared by Mark Thomas and Company Incorporated. City Engineer, John.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Mayor, Council Members. John Robertson, City Engineer. I'm just here to briefly introduce the systemic safety analysis report and the firm from Mark Thomas that prepared this for the city. Just a little background, the city was awarded a grant as part of the Highway Safety Improvement Program, or HSIP, which you've heard of in the past, of approximately $225,000 to prepare what's titled a systemic safety analysis report, which is a report that has gone through and analyzed various intersections and segments throughout the city to determine their safety, the relative safety of the intersections and improvements that could potentially happen. We can do in this area to improve the safety. And in general, looking at the safety of the towns of these segments and sections, intersections. In May of 2017, after a competitive process, the city selected Mark Thomas and Associates to perform this work for us. And over the last year or so, they've been working with us and going over and doing the analysis that was required for them to come up with the conclusions and recommendations. Ultimately, the idea is that we are able to identify projects that will qualify well for the HSIP funds. Because in the past, I've had a hard time getting these HSIP funds because there's certain factors that are required to get that funding. It has to do with accident history and other things that we just weren't having a lot of to be able to really get it. It was kind of if we get more accidents, we get more funding, but we don't want more accidents. So it was kind of but there are other opportunities, and this is what Mark Thomas was able to identify for us. And so I'm going to turn the time over to Ed Noriega and Jessica Regar to kind of go over and give the results and the analysis for the report.
Thank you. Good evening. As John mentioned, the SSAR is mainly in the past, to compete for HSIP funds, agencies react to call for projects from the COG. So when the call for projects come, city staff or the county staff or whatnot, they try to get organized, try to put together projects that they feel could win funds from HSIP for highway safety. What SSAR does is it's a proactive approach in analyzing the network prior to those call for projects, and that's what the purpose of this effort was. And so our presentation tonight is mainly a report on the findings associated with the SSAR and what the report contains. And so, as mentioned, the goal of the SSAR is to help local agencies analyze their network so that projects can be identified for future call for projects for HSIP funding. But the SSAR is mainly a component of the state highway plan, which focuses on four items. It's a comprehensive look of traffic or of highway safety associated with these four elements up on top: the engineering, education, enforcement, and emergency medical services. Of those four, They list 15 challenges associated with highway safety, shown the up there on the green boxes. What we've done is we've dissected those and looked at infrastructure improvements associated with highway safety, as well as non-infrastructure improvements, and that's what we'll be presenting tonight. I'll be going over the non-infrastructure improvements. Jessica will report on the infrastructure improvements that are directly tied to the HSIP program, the Highway Safety Program. So the Office of Traffic Safety for the state compares cities of similar cities. So for the city of Reedley, it's comparable to 93 other cities along the state. It's hard to read up there, but there are 93 other cities that are alike, that are similar to Reedley, and the rankings here that you see on the right column are the rankings relative to those 93 cities. One being the worst type of ranking. So one means unsafe, 93 means fairly safe. So if you look at the column here, the numbers are fairly high. So Reedley has been historically a really safe city. So what we did was we took the top three rankings that for Reedley, the worst rankings, which are underage drinking and driving, accidents associated with pedestrians under 15 years old, as well as bicyclists. And so the state, through CHP, has a number of programs how to make cities safer, local agencies safer. And based on those three types of weaknesses, I suppose, here at the city, we've identified three ways of these three programs that the city can coordinate with CHP are related to underage drinking. And three other programs that we've listed here in the report are associated with pedestrians as well as cyclists. And so within the report, we've identified these programs that the city can partner up with CHP. CHP has a number of presentations that they do all over the county. They probably don't do it here in the city yet, but what can happen is, within the report, it's a reminder of just proactively engaging CHP to invite them to maybe have a presentation at a high school or at a middle school about underage drinking, or perhaps about safety associated with walking the streets as well as cycling. And another element of the report are a list of funding sources, federal and state funding sources that are connected to safety, highway safety. And so as these call for projects become available through COG, they're listed in the report so that city staff can then, will know that to reach for the report, and the projects identified within the report that Jessica will talk about later are within the information associated with what's needed for those applications for those funds are within the report. So with that, we'd like to go over the infrastructure related items, the actual projects that can go to construction associated with HSIP. So this map here is the heat map, they call it, which it's the city of Reedley, and the colors that you see here in the middle are mainly the collisions around the city of Reedley. So you can kind of see here, this hard to read, but this is Manning Avenue up here, and the I Street corridor along the tracks goes diagonal. And so as Jessica goes over the projects that we've identified, you'll see that it's tied to the heat map. And this is mainly data associated with the past 5 years of collisions within the city of Reedley.
So our analysis began by just getting our data. Like Ed said, we started with 5 years of data from the year 2013 to 2017. As we started looking at these collisions in more detail, we saw that you have a really safe network. As you can see from the pie chart up here, you can't really see it, but it's 80% of your collisions that have happened in the 5 years have been only property damage. And from the 20% that resulted in injury, really only 1% of that was a severe injury or a fatality. And that's something that we haven't seen really before, so you should really be excited about having a pretty safe network. As we dove even deeper, we analyzed what kind of collisions are happening on your network. We saw high percentages for rear end, side swipes, and hit objects, rear end being the most at 59%. And some countermeasures that we looked at as we analyzed all the locations that could address those, specifically those rear end collisions, were high friction surface treatments, additions of left turn pockets, and advanced warning signs. Those are just a few of the ones that we saw as common cords. We analyzed all of the intersections in the city, as you can see from the graphic on the right. And then we also looked at your major roadway arterials in the city. And we analyzed the data along these corridors and intersections to identify hotspots, areas where there were concentrations maybe in collisions or areas that were high risk. And the goal from that analysis was to identify 20 intersections and 10 roadway segments that we would continue to dive even deeper into to understand what was really causing these collisions along those locations. We used three rankings to decide these top 10 and 20 locations. The first one was just the number of collisions, so just adding up how many are occurring in that location. Then there was a cost of collisions. HSIP has a dollar amount assigned based by severity. So a more severe accident's going to get a higher dollar amount, more benefit for essentially removing that from the system, if that makes sense. And then we have a crash rate ranking that is analyzing how many collisions are happening per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, if that makes it a little bit confusing. But it's just basically leveling the playing field for us to be able to analyze everything at a consistent standard. We took these three rankings, and we were able to obviously identify our top 10 and 20 projects. These are your top 20 intersections that were identified through this process. And then these are your top 10 roadway segments that were identified. If we go back and look at the heat map one more time, and we look at really where those red concentrations are of collisions, because this is based on the number of collisions on your network, so those hotspot areas, and we look at where your top 30 projects land, we're really covering a lot of those hotspot areas along Manning Avenue, Reed Avenue, and in your downtown area along the I Street corridor, things like that. So that really reassured us that we are hitting the top priority areas for the city. This report really accumulates all of the data for your city staff to be able to go after funds, which is the whole goal of the SSAR, as we've previously told you. Some of the improvements, details that you would need for applications, we have presented in tables within the report, like the one that you see up here on the screen. It will include information on the collision history at that location, the summary of just the existing conditions out there so that we make sure that we have appropriate countermeasures being implemented. It will recommend up to three safety improvement projects and their associated cost estimates. And then we also have developed schematics like the one you see up here or in your packet along Button Willow Avenue that shows the improvements that would be implemented at the location, whether they are funded through the HSIP program, maybe with recent development that's going in, or even with local funding. So that's an awesome tool to have. And then with that, we'll just kind of open it with questions if you have any for us.
I have a question.
Sure.
Do you find, and I don't know if this is appropriate to be asked to you, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you find that putting a middle lane without any like cement boulders or anything just lining it makes a difference.
So like the button willow example where we're just striping a center lane.
Right.
I do think it will help because it's providing a space for that driver to get out of the passing way of all of the other people traveling as they wait to safely turn, make that left turn into a side street. So it provides that just like refuge area for them. So even though it doesn't maybe have the medians installed, it's still, I think, safer than just letting them sit in that lane and get hit. So.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
If I may add, for a raised median, there are a number of reasons why you would install a raised median, which is the curb, so mm-hmm. that you're mm-hmm. controlling access. Mm-hmm. Normally what happens is that the initial improvement would be a two-way left, mainly a striped left turn lane, suicide lane as some people would call it. The purpose of it really is when you have one lane in each direction to get that the through movement off of the through movement to be able to go through while the left turner is able to get away from that through movement. Mm-hmm. Then over time, as driveways come in, as lanes are added, if the corridor is planned for, let's say, a four-lane corridor, and you have multiple driveways, sometimes it becomes unsafe to have a lot of mainly full access. You have folks turning into properties and folks turning left out of properties. And so that's when a raised median ought to be implemented. And usually what happens in your general plan, in when you have a corridor that's planned for a four-lane roadway, for instance, you have a standard drawing of what a four-lane roadway should be for the type of activity that that roadway would have. And so as the build-out happens, the city engineer will be able to tell improvement that a median needs to go in with the project. And maybe through impact fees, a median can be delivered through an entire corridor. And so that's how a project could evolve.
Thank you.
Just to add in there, one of the keys on that is the amount of traffic volume going through there is a key factor in that. If you have a high traffic volume going through this area, it really makes it necessary to control where the turning movements happen. If it's not as much traffic volume, you can generally keep the two-way left turn lane without the raised median. So that's a big, you got to take all those factors into consideration, mm-hmm. the usage of properties around it and volumes of traffic and other things.
I noticed that on Button Willow, that section that's here on the project thing, we get a lot of traffic now. I know I used to be able to come out, stop, and then get out into the Button Willow now from mm-hmm. my neighborhood, mm-hmm. and now I have to wait. Uh-huh. There's a lot of traffic. In fact, a friend of mine got rear-ended just the other day right there on Button Willow right before Rite Aid.
There
is a lot more traffic.
So it's increasing, and so it's something we got to consider. Mm-hmm.
So we can apply then with something like this for grants and...
The information provided in the report, they provided a lot of the background information that we need to, when we're filling out the application, we already have it in to submit, and it helps our applications look a lot better.
That's good.
Give us a better opportunity to receive the funding.
Good.
Does this help control speed? It's nice to have all these things, but, you know, people just don't care about the stop signs and speed.
You know, the first app we've already submitted one application and it's really directly related to that. It has to do with the fact that we've considered the signage that we have throughout the town, the age of it, the reflectivity of it. It has to meet certain requirements that it's not currently meeting just because of age, and also some other requirements have been increased, and so we're looking to get better reflectivity of our signage throughout town to make sure that it's visible to the drivers, and in hopes that they see that at night or during the day and they are cognizant of the fact of what the speeds are. So in that terms, I'm hoping that we do provide an opportunity for people to, it is slower in this location, slow down. The speed is so driver dependent that it's we can't, it's very hard to govern their own independence. But with hopes of making sure that they can see the signs and there's no excuses that they knew what the speed should be.
Right. Well, one of the things that bothers me is North and G for the high school. If you folks would sit there at lunchtime with me and see the people that don't stop at the stop sign, trucks that come in to G Street and they see the no truck sign, no truck route sign, but yet they still come down. The problem is that we don't have a map for these businesses, especially packing houses, to let the companies that deal with these trucking companies, to let them know where the roads are that they should be taking instead of coming into the areas that right. they don't belong to.
We do have a truck route map on the internet and city's website, so we maybe an opportunity for us to reach out to businesses and remind everybody that that's on there for them to get.
Right. Ruston Public Works put a no truck route just before they got to G Street.
Right.
But yet those trucks keep coming in.
You know, we've really found that traffic issues are related to three things: engineering, education, and enforcement.
Right.
And you need all three of those really working together to really help the situation.
And I could honestly say that in the 40 years that I've been in that business, right in that intersection, I would say that 40 stop signs, one a year, have been knocked over because of the trucks. Oh, yeah. It's a short turn.
Yeah, it is.
But the routes to the city, that somebody is not giving those truck companies
the information.
You know, the information as to what streets to take.
Correct. Yeah.
So, and I don't know how to control that. I can just keep telling you folks about it, but how do we control it? It's hard.
I think through our engineering and education and enforcement and making sure that it's clearly understood and marked well for people to see.
Yeah. Or citing them some way.
Yeah, the enforcement part, yeah.
But you don't want to discourage companies from coming into retail.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So. Yeah, I get semis coming down my street at my house, too, quite often. And I see them coming towards the old convalescent home, and it's like, oh, I know you're going to be backing up. So I go out there and say, where do you want to go? And they're usually wanting to go across the river, and they think that goes through there. So, yeah, so they end up backing up, and I go flag down somebody so they stay out of their way. Get him out of there. But so you're not alone.
Five motorcycles.
Yeah. I have a question for you. Yes.
Yes.
It's regarding the types of collisions.
Yes.
In the had been drinking and drinking above certain ages. This is only alcohol related. Where's the drug part? Because is this a 2015?
So are you talking about the boxes of the challenge areas? Oh, in there. So I believe it's under the influence, and I think they lump the drug part in with it.
It has nothing about drugs in there. And if I'm not mistaken, with the passage of marijuana, we're looking at a large increase. That's almost going to have to be a separate category to run these stats because I think you're going to see about us. They're estimating as high as a 70% increase into this problem, if I'm not mistaken, to the state. So that could be skewed as far as I'm concerned with this.
And that might be reflected later on in
that's
future
why I'm
OTS
this
rankings.
This says
yeah.
2015 OTS.
Yeah, and that's so their most recent one right now.
Yeah, so that's why I was curious if they're going to
but
be
I know in the there. Whole SAR analysis, if they have DUI or biking under influence, BUI, I believe they encompass the drug. It's anything that's inheriting.
Well, when you use the term under the influence, yes, but this uses the term.
Oh, it
alcohol.
Has drinking. Okay, yeah. It might become a category. You never know.
That's why I'm saying, because I believe you're going to see a definite change in your stats with that. So
I just would like to make a comment. You mentioned that we are low.
Does that have to do collisions? With the OTS rankings?
I think I just want to make a comment in regard to our fire department, police department. all those that are out there policing and watching out for our community. I know that we are at the top as far as less collisions and whatnot. And I think it has a lot to do with our departments really being on top of stuff. I love the fact that they're always proactive in what they do. In fact, I know not too long ago, several years ago, maybe we had the every 15-minute program, which I thought did great for our students and our youngsters in town. And I think we're at the top because there's a lot of good people we're really working hard at.
It shows through the report, so definitely.
So I just want to say thank you to all those folks that are involved in that. So. Mm-hmm.
Any more comments? Any comments from the public? Thank you very, very much. Okay, we'll move on to our council reports. Councilman Soleno.
I was going to ask Sarah about the soccer program, but she's not here. I can ask her later on.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Fess.
Just a comment. I noticed that the burned out house on Olson Avenue by Frankwood has been taken down and is now an empty lot, and that looks really good.
It does.
And I just wanted to mention that there's another house that's on Justine Avenue with the same situation where there actually was recently a house fire that started at a property that needs to be torn down and went on to another house that actually had six people living in there and are now without a home. So I was wondering if we could get the staff to look into that Justine property to maybe do the same thing that we did with the Olson Avenue house, please.
Okay. And Councilmember Fast, under our procedures and protocols that we normally follow, or rather I should say the precedent, when council requests something from the dais, if another council member sort of seconds it, we put it on a future agenda. So if any other council members would like to see that come forward, we can bring that forward.
So moved.
Okay. So we'll do some analysis and research and bring it back to the council.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay, real good. Okay, we'll move on to staff reports.
Sorry about that, following up on our on that. A couple things. One, we did get notified today from the California Department of Food and Agriculture, as well as the county ag commissioner, that there is going to be an Asian citrus psyllid program of treatment. It'll include quarantine and some application of insecticides. So you all as council members will be receiving notice. It looks very, very formal and scary, the notice you're getting, so I'm kind of giving you a heads up that we got it as well. And any resident that's going to be impacted, meaning if Asian citrus psyllid was found on their property, they will be notified directly by the county ag commissioner and the California Department of Ag. So the notice to you is really just to notify you of what's going on in your community, and we're following up and keeping tabs on all that. So just a heads up on that. Also a heads up, on Thursday afternoon, the Chamber of Commerce is doing a final videotaping for their mascot for the Fiesta. I don't know if you've been following, but they've had two series segments already, kind of getting the excitement on a new mascot for the Fiesta. It's really cute. Tony Cabrera, who's a news anchor, is now living in Reedley and has been helping with that. Mm-hmm. So Thursday, they're going to do the final taping here in the council chambers, and the chamber has asked if any of you would like to attend. They would love to have you as part of this video segment. So if you're interested, let Sylvia or I know, and we'll get you arranged with the time, etc. My understanding is we are going to have every single mascot that exists in the city of Reedley in the chambers. So the Emmanuel Eagle, the Reedley Pirate, the College Tiger, just found out today the hospital has a mascot. It's a penguin, Pip the Penguin. Who knew the hospital had a mascot, and why a penguin in Reedley? I don't know, but anyways. So Other items, next week on Wednesday, the Workforce Development Board is going to be coming to City Hall to speak with us about new programs they have for workforce development. So I'm eager to see what they have, and if there's anything productive out of that meeting, we will let you know. And then also this coming Friday, very exciting, our three executives from Boeing coming down to fly our electric plane and have lunch with Joseph and I and talk about it. And so very, very excited about that for this Friday. So any staff comments?
I wanted to stand up and give a brief follow-up on the Manning Avenue Phase 2 project. It's gone real well, I feel. I've driven over it a number of times, and the contractor's done a great job. We're not quite done. They've finished the cape seal, but we've got to go out and do the striping and then come back in and put in the traffic control loops back in. So there'll be a little more work, but it won't be nearly as intrusive and impactful as it has been. But the project has gone really well, and we've been very happy with the results so far. So, and the school working with St. LaSalle's has been great, and talked with Ed Todd, and he has said that they parents and they had no issues with getting in and out in the mornings, and so it went real well and real smooth. So it's been a good project for us.
John, just to let you know that I deal with about 40 customers a week, and half of them continue asking about Reed Avenue. I'm trying to explain to them it's, you know, there's been some holdups on that, and working with PG&E and whatever. I said it's going to be done, but you have to be patient. And they just keep saying, well, they've been there a long time. I said, well, it'll be done, but just work with the city. You know,
they're on schedule, actually. I know it might feel like it. They are on schedule. They're finishing up the concrete improvements now. And, in fact, I believe the sidewalk, that last section from KFC up, has now been poured and put down. So now there's a complete sidewalk on the street. And so they're finishing those up, and then starting on the 24th is when the major roadway work will start, which we've talked about before. I know mentioned it last time, where we'll have to really getting the word out to people. And city manager said last time, it might be best just to avoid Reed Avenue for a while. And for a couple of weeks, I'd say that's probably true. But that will start, and then we should be wrapping it up in the by the end, middle to end of October. Mm-hmm. That project should be wrapping up.
Yeah, right now, Mr. Soleno, I just grit my teeth when somebody starts to say Reed, and I just think one more month and we're done. So, one more month.
Thank you. Yeah. One more question.
Yes,
and
sir.
This just came up just yesterday, and I forgot about it. Our mosquito abatement program, what kind do we have? There's concern that south of town by Palm Village, some homeowners out there are experiencing mosquitoes.
Yes.
Oh, I am
this
too.
This is actually valley-wide right now. Uh-huh. There is a mosquito explosion, and the Mosquito Abatement District is going around and spraying. And so people who are calling into City Hall, we're advising and giving the number for the Mosquito Abatement District so that they can get the notification on when the Mosquito Abatement District is going around and spraying, because your tax dollars are going towards that district, and they're taking care of that. But this year, for some reason, and there's been some speculation as to why the mosquitoes have exploded so much. Nobody has the answer, but it's been experienced up and down the valley completely. So,
you know, the first thing I thought about, maybe somebody in the neighborhood has a pool that's not being taken care of, and that could cause a problem. So,
yeah.
You never know. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other staff? Okay, I think that's all, Mayor.
Okay, and then we'll go into closed session.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. I'll read in two items on this evening's closed session. One is pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, subsection D1. That's conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation. There's one case up for discussion. Item number two is conference with real property negotiators. The property address is 1148 11th Street in Reedley. Nicole is the agency negotiator. The negotiating parties is Carmen and Guadalupe Escobar, TRS. Under negotiation tonight is the price. Any public comment on either of those items is appropriate at this time?
None? Okay. Go into closed session.